Welcome to the Tour Life Podcast from Well Better Best. I'm Janine, your host, integrative nutrition health coach and personal trainer. In the past 10 years, I've had the privilege of meeting some of the most interesting and hardworking professionals in the music industry. Whether you are a fan of live music or someone who actually puts on the shows, you'll find some great stories, advice, and encouragement to live a happier, healthier life doing what you love. Today's guest is a talent manager who for nearly a decade as part of Scoremore Management has played an intimate role in the career of Tory Lanez, with past responsibilities including tour manager, DJ, music director, security, A&R, and songwriter. In this episode, we discuss what it's like to have to pivot from football into working in the music industry, leaning into uncomfortable feelings in order to reach your full potential, being self-aware in order to grow and hold yourself accountable, why failing is an essential part of the journey, and the importance of trusting your gut. You can find him on Instagram at Philip A. Payne. Here is my conversation with Philip Payne. Philip, thank you so much for joining me on the Tour Life Podcast.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor. It really is. I love what you're doing. You really, really are inspiring so many people and telling us a side of the story that a lot of people don't get to hear and people relate to.
That means so much, honestly, because, you know, and this is something we talked about before I hit record about, you know, not knowing what the fuck you're doing and then kind of figuring it out along the way.
Right. Just not knowing at all. It's anyway, especially in the entertainment industry, it's such a blind grind. You know, you don't know if it's going to pan out or not. You're just like going off of faith and effort and hard work. And, you know, I think we're all insane to tell you the truth.
You have to be a little crazy, yeah.
Right? But I like the naiveness, and, you know, sometimes I kind of miss that about being 22, 23, when you're just like, you're naive and you don't care what happens, and you're just like, you know, I just want this and I'll deal with the consequences when they come, you know. But it's really, really cool. I think everybody, I tell people that I talk to and even my artists that I work with, I always tell them, like, don't ever stop dreaming. Don't ever, ever stop dreaming, because, you know, that is what is going to really, really take you far and hopefully make you reach your full potential.
Yeah, definitely. And it's hard to see your full potential, right? It seems like such an abstract
thing. Yes, for sure.
So, Philip, Tell me your story. Let's share your story, because, you know, I know a little bit about it, but as with everyone, there's always so much more. So just tell me, where did you think you were going? And then what happened that you ended up in the music industry?
I'm Philip Anthony Payne. I'm from Garland, Texas. My mom is from Brooklyn, New York, but she raised me in Texas. She came to Texas because it was during the 80s, and New York wasn't kind of the best place to be at the time. So she moved to Texas and she raised me in Texas, in Garland, Texas. And pretty early, I kind of fell in love with football, because Garland is probably about 20 minutes from Dallas, which the Dallas Cowboys, which the 90s. And that is when they were who the fans of them now wish they were, you know, because they were winning a whole bunch of Super Bowls, and there was Emmitt Smith and Troy Aikman and Deion Sanders. And I just remember watching them on TV as a little kid and just being like, yo, I want to do that. And for a while, my mom wouldn't let me play football. And she was just like, you know, I don't want you to get hurt, you know, and buying the equipment and stuff. And then I got to about 10 or 11 and she finally let me play. And I did really, really well. And then we got to probably in high school, she couldn't come to a lot of the games, but I would tell her like, Mom, I'm kind of good in this. I think I can go to college for free. And I remember one day, my freshman year in college, my freshman year in high school, I got my first letter from the University of Colorado. And then after that one, it came from A&M, and then almost every college followed through after that. And then once I got to like my junior year, I could pretty much go to any college that I wanted to. At the time, the University of Texas was doing really, 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 really well. They had Vince Young, who was doing amazing things at the time, and they were the number two team in the nation. And I went to a junior day, went to a visit, and I just fell in love with Austin, Texas. Coming to the University of Texas, I just was like, yo, I love the prestige. I love the tradition of this place. I love the town. Just so much fun, so active. Probably the most diverse place in Texas. And I love the energy in Austin. From there, I mean, being at the University of Texas, it's a super prestigious school, known for putting athletes in the NFL, known for, you know, the championships and known for just having the top tier players. And, you know, initially I was coming here, my mindset was Texas is a pit stop for me to go to the NFL. That was it, because that was my dream since I was a little kid, and everything had went exactly how it was supposed to go. I had manifested every single thing that I wanted up until, you know, college. So I get to college. These kids are just as good, if not better than me. So that is a shock at its own, because I had gotten to college just off of God-given talent. It was the first time that I was pushed in a place where I had to actually work hard if I wanted to be on the field. So after I did a couple of years of pouting about that, because that's exactly what I was doing, pouting, complaining, oh, the coach, this isn't happening. Oh, I don't have this. Or, you know, after I got over that, and I started putting in the work and, you know, shutting my mouth, and people started seeing that I was doing that, I started playing a little bit. But then I got hurt. You know, when you get hurt at a place like Texas, it's very, very easy to get lost in the shuffle. I think at that moment, I was just like, now I'm in my redshirt junior year. I think I kind of have to figure something else out. And I remember just thinking, who am I without being an athlete? Like, I was so scared about the next stage, because I didn't know what it was. I prayed about it, and luckily it came to me very, very fast. And it was music, because I remember, you know, being raised in the church. I remember singing in the church choir. I remember, you know, all of my friends always telling me about how good my ear for music was. I remember always putting my friends on to artists before they blew up. And I started thinking about those things. And then I looked up music executive and I saw an A&R. And I was like, ooh, what's A&R? And I was like, oh, so you get to actually get paid to like listen to music and develop art. Like, that's an actual job. I was like, okay, boom, I want to do that. So once I committed to what I wanted to do, it was just like, okay, how do I do that? I'm in Austin, Texas. What do I do? This is the live music capital of the world, so they say. So I was like, okay, there's South by Southwest. There's C3, who puts on ACL. There's, you know, all types of promotion companies. I'll intern for every single one. I'll figure it out. And in that pursuit, I ended up meeting a girl named Claire Bogle, who her partner was a guy named Sasha Stone. And I ended up meeting them on separate occasions, actually. But my first run into Sasha, who is my best friend and also my partner now in a record label and on the management side, when I first met him, it was outside of a Mellow Mushroom pizza place, and I was walking home from practice, and you know, Sasha was this 21 year old kid actually at the time, was starting this promotion company. It's called Score More Shows. He and the team were just all about booking acts that they listened to, and those people that they listened to happened to be J. Cole, Kendrick Lamar, Wiz Khalifa, Big Sean, kind of the leader of what would be the new school of hip hop. And at the time, I loved what they were doing because they were kind of like A&Rs in itself, even though they were concert promoters. So I was just like, okay, they're booking real talent and quality talent, and it's stuff that we listen to as kids. And the Live Nation and AEGs, they haven't gotten to them yet. They don't see that value yet, but we do. Being a part of that was just so special. While I was working with him, I started just out doing flyers and being the street team manager. And me and him grew as friends and grew as colleagues. And eventually I became the brand manager, and eventually I was a promoter rep. And then he went and worked in New York for a while, came back and was like, yo, there's this artist that I would love for you to help me with, to work with, take a listen to his music. And the artist was named Tory Lanez. And he was from Toronto. He's from Toronto, Canada. And he's in a situation right now that isn't the one that he wants to be in. So I would love for us to like work with this together. I want you to go on the road with him. So I listened to the music. And then one day we were moving into our apartment. He played a record called Remembrance Day. And I fell in love with the record. It was a singing record. And I was like, wow, he raps and he sings. That is when I met Tory and we sat down, and I could tell we both had the same type of chip on our shoulder as far as like proving people wrong, because we had both found success at one point, and now it had seemed like it wasn't what we thought it was, or what wasn't what people had perceived it to be. So we heard the rumblings, we heard people saying like, you know, it's over, or you're falling off, and that such, and we felt like people were kind of doubting us. And the same thing with Sasha, like us being young in the business, I don't think people thought that we could get to the place that we are now and are going. That was 2011, 2012. And from then on, I first started in this business as a tour manager, road manager, security, DJ, A&R, any role I could do, I was doing it. And just helping where I could, I'm rambling now, but now I'm in a place where when people ask me, what do? I don't really know what to say, because it's like, and that's why I just like to say, I work with artists, because that's what I do. And whatever is in that realm, I am actually willing to do, because I have done it. I've done merch. I've done, you know, management, I've done A&R, I've wrote songs, I've done, you know, everything that you can do when it comes to the music business. And you know, as Tory grew, we went on tours all around the world. We toured with Future, Migos, we toured with Drake, we toured with Chris Brown, we've toured with so many artists, and I've been blessed to go around the world. And probably about a year ago, me and Tory sat down, and he was just like, yo, I don't feel like you want to be out here anymore. And I was like, why do you feel that way? He's like, there's more of a responsibility for you to take. God is putting on my spirit that there's something else that you need to be doing that you're more passionate about, because I don't see that light in you anymore. And you know, me and him made the decision for me to come off and try to hone in more on being an executive and developing more artists. He was the first one to ever tell me that he saw a talent in me writing. But being on the management side and being on the touring side, like, you have so many other responsibilities that you have to do. I didn't really have the time to kind of tap into my creative side as much as I would like to. But you know, we were in a really good time where I had took some time off. We had enough people around to delegate responsibilities to. I could come out and we could just go in the studio and I can just work and just like create. The album that was coming up that I really, really always wanted to get really, really in with him was this album called Chicks Tape 5, where we take samples from the golden eras of R&B music and we put a new era spin on it and make it, you know, our own. But what Tory did that was different from all the other ones was he put the original artists on his remake. So that's how he paid homage to them. Like, he brought them in, and just for them to be like, you know, that is the ultimate blessing for you to be like, okay, I'll redo the record with you. So we got to do that, and that's when I got to get in with Ashanti and get in with Mario and Maya and, you know, and all these legends in the game and get to help out and get to create with them. And now, fast forward, me and my partner Sasha and Troy we just started a label called Melody Co., where we're doing fair artist partnerships and just trying to put artists in a position to be owners and to really, really look at this as business owners, not just artists, like to really, really help them financially, mentally, physically, like emotionally, everything that we can do.
That's a really, really fascinating story. I think, you know, you went from wanting to be a football player, your mom not being supportive, having to prove her wrong from the beginning, and having to prove, you know, other people wrong. I mean, you know, the fact that you said that, you know, the equipment was an issue, that, you know, the possible injuries would be an issue, and then for her to not be able to go to follow your football career in high school, you know, it seems like that whole pattern kind of just repeated a little bit throughout time. Tell me a little bit about that.
It's funny, but nobody really, I think I heard Will Smith say this. Nobody really sees the vision, but you, like nobody knows who you are, but you, you know? And I've always just had a weird.
Well, you call it blind trust, right? It's like, it's just faith.
Yeah. I've had faith. I've always had a really good hold on manifesting things and really, really seeing them all the way through into reality.
Where do you think it comes from?
I honestly think about that all the time. It has to be God. No, of course. But, and I also think, you know, sometimes I'm like, can I turn it off? Is there some insecurity under it? Like, why can't I turn off my ambition? I can't. It's something that I think I was born with. What I try to do my best of now is transfer that energy to other people, because I know that other people can do the things that they want to do if they just believe. And what I feel like my job is to help people and push them and help them see things in themselves that they can't at the time. But it's just to inspire people to keep dreaming and to keep going. Like, because that, I mean, I'm a testimony of it. I wasn't the smartest. I wasn't the brightest. I wasn't the fastest. I wasn't the strongest. I wasn't the, you know, I didn't have all of the support from everybody. My mom wasn't taking me to extra camps and doing these extra things. I didn't get to go to internships in music. I didn't major in the music business. I didn't, you know, do all these things and get all these tools. But what I did is I was honest. I was a good person. I kept a smile on my face. I believed in my ability so much and in God so much that I was willing for it to go bad. I was willing for it to go sour and be okay with it. I think that is something interesting. And that's when that's when you know you really love a profession, when you know that you're willing to go all out and look stupid for it.
I love that you brought that up, because a lot of times I think that we kind of question ourselves, and we're, you know, and like we said earlier, you know, am I crazy for wanting to do this? Like, this isn't the safe route. This isn't what anybody else would do. No one understands what the hell I'm doing. But being able to really lean into that feeling of being uncomfortable and not knowing what the hell you're doing.
Honestly.
Do you think it had to do with the fact that you kind of had to rely on yourself so much?
Well, I think that I've always kind of been in that type of mindset of, if I do want something, I'm going to have to go get it. Nobody is going to give you anything. What's weird is that it does put you in some uncomfortable situations, because sometimes your want is going to collide with somebody else's want. And I've always said, like, great things come out of collision, though. Like, always.
Like diamonds.
Yes, always. Great things come out of collision. Like, for you to get to the other side, like, eventually you're going to have to collide. So it's like, I've just always been willing to, though.
Have you seen other people in your life as an example of being willing to put themselves in those places and come out alive?
Yeah, being uncomfortable. I think the person who inspires me the most is Kobe Bryant. That is a guy who overachieved. He, of course, was very, very talented, but he was willing to work and willing to do things that other people weren't willing to do. He was willing to make sacrifices in places that other people weren't willing to make sacrifices in order to, you know, not only be great, but reach his full potential as a human being. Because that's something that I am intrigued with, is what is it like when I reach my full potential, when I stretch myself as far as I can go? What is that like?
I don't think I ever quite understood, I guess, the appeal of a sports star to young people. And I mean, I grew up with Michael Jordan. Like, I came to the US from Mexico in 93. And so, you know, the whole time I lived here when I was little, it was like the Bulls were just like killing it, right? Yeah. And so I vividly remember him and the team, how they did inspire me, but I never really quite, you know, followed them all the way through the way that I know I've heard a lot of people. Like, I have a friend, Marcus, who plays basketball overseas, and he's a super huge Kobe fan. You know, like, my boyfriend, he's a super huge Jordan fan. And all of you guys, like, know the history and, like, you know, you're really into it. And I didn't ever quite understand what it was. But the more that I listen to people's stories and the more that I actually pay attention to the way that they describe these players' careers, it seems to come down to that element of, like, knowing that you can do it because you put in the work.
Work, yes, for sure.
And that's all that you have to do. And I think a lot of us have been trained to think that either we have it or we don't.
Yeah, it's very true.
And these sports stars really do a good job at transcending that and showing, you know, kids especially, that that's not what it is.
Yeah, because I think everybody can also just relate to persevering through something, you know. And, you know, with athletes that reach that level, you know, they have to go through so many uncomfortable, you know, situations to get to that place. Working out, pushing their body to places that, you know, most people are scared to go. But in order to, you know, obtain, you know, that championship or to make the people around them better or to inspire other people, they step up to the challenge. And I think everybody just kind of, you know, envies that about them. I mean, in my favorite athletes, that's the thing that makes them my favorite athletes when it comes to Tom Brady, when it comes to Jordan, when it comes to Kobe Bryant. It's not so much of their talent and, you know, what they do on the field. It's the preparation. It's the sacrifice. It's the willingness, the hardships. It's the mentality. It's like you get it. You're willing to do what it takes in order to not only win, but to inspire people like me, because you know it's bigger than you.
So that's Mamba mentality?
I guess that's Mamba mentality.
It's, you know, I love it. It's, you know, because I am so kind of like far removed, like I dabble, you know, like I watch, you know, sports and stuff, but I never really quite understood like the deep parts of it. And it really is beautiful. Like there's a lot to it.
Oh, it's beautiful. It really is beautiful, because me coming from sports and being in music, I try to mix them both in it, and I'm always looking for things to compete in. You know, I'm always trying to find an edge in something. Like, that's kind of how I've gotten here. I've made up stories about people. Like, I've done that just to like find a competitive edge, just to find something in me to keep going and to you know, prove people wrong, because that's fun to me.
I want to know a little bit about how it felt, you know, to define yourself as an athlete for so long, and to really find that you reinforced this belief that you could do what you set your mind to, and then to find yourself in a place where you had to do something else.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was thinking about this question, just how did I get past that moment? And because I remember it like it was yesterday, saying out loud that like, this is over. Like, this part of my life, I'm 22 years old. I've been playing this game my whole life. This is over now. I didn't make it to the NFL. I remember saying those words out loud. I remember looking at my name tag. I remember looking at my helmet, crying. I remember just being in a place of like how, like what now? I'm happy that I let myself feel that. I'm happy that I let myself feel what to me at that point felt like failure, because I tried to do something, and it, for the first time, I tried, and it didn't work. It didn't happen for me. And I thought that moment would be, first of all, I never thought that I would ever even see that moment. But I thought that moment, if I did see it, would be detrimental to me. And it's interesting to see now that when that part of me died, it was a rebirth, and it was the steps that turned me into the person I am today. That moment is instrumental in who Philip Payne is now. Going through that moment is something that I think everybody needs to go through at least once in your lifetime, of having to pivot and switch your identity, because it made what I'm going through now, as far as like making a transition to more creating content and being the talent and, you know, doing things like that, it made this tradition, I mean, this transition less uncomfortable. I was a little bit more, I'm still uncomfortable, still very uncomfortable, but I'm a little bit more familiar with what that feels like to see. It's not as sad anymore.
Yeah, it's not as scary.
Yeah, and now I see it as a challenge and as something that I want to lean into instead of be afraid of.
So when you were afraid, when you were in that moment that you had to finally say it out loud, you know, I'm not going to be playing for the NFL, and you had to accept it. Take me through the feelings and Take me through how it actually affected the way that you went about living your life.
Yeah, at that moment, I remember going, because I think I had something like a counselor in college, and I remember telling her, yo, if I don't go to the league, then I'm a failure. Like, that's it. And I remember her asking me, why do you feel that way? And I remember saying, because this is all I've ever wanted. This is it. And I remember her telling me to think about it and come back. And I thought about it, and I still felt that way. I still felt that way for maybe like a week, I think. I think with prayer and meditation, that's kind of what got me through it, because I was at a place where the worst that could happen happened. So now I had no choice, you know, but to get up, you know, because the worst fear of mine was not making it and looking silly and being a bust and being not panning out like I was supposed to, and letting the people that all depended on me to make it down. That was the worst that could happen. And once I felt it, once I was there in it, I was like, okay, what's next? And you have to get to it. But this is the thing also. When I did choose the music industry, I could tell there was something different, because my passion for music, I knew, would propel me further than a lot of people, because I was willing to die trying to achieve the things that I wanted.
Because you had done that already.
Yeah, because I felt like there were times in football that was my fault. I didn't put in the work at times. There were certain things that I that were in my control that I didn't do. So what I did do different is I said, with this next stage in my life, this won't be my fault. It won't be something that I did to sabotage it. It won't be a lack of effort. It won't be a lack of work. It'll be because, you know, I didn't get it, but I doubt that.
Yeah. So you mentioned that there were people that you felt you would be letting down. And then you also mentioned that there was basically this sort of guilt because you feel like you didn't give it your all. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I felt like, you know, there were moments, like I said, when I first came to Texas, I was entitled. I was spoiled. I was, you know, I just felt like my position should eventually be given to me, because my talent, something that I didn't feel like I really had to really work at, I could just show up and it came so natural to me. When it finally got to a place I was hit with adversity, I wasn't prepared for it. Not in a place where I thought that I was already an expert at. I was like, wait a minute, I have to actually, what? Or I'm not going to play? What? So being hit with that, I kind of wasted a lot of time that I could have used more productively. And, you know, if I would have used that time, because there's no doubt in my mind I didn't have the talent. Like, of course I had the talent, but I didn't have the mentality. I didn't have the work ethic. And those are things that you need in order to, you know, get to that level. Some people don't need them too. I think there was a lot of me comparing my journey to somebody else's journey. There are some people who could literally just show up on Saturday and don't have to practice none and just show up and ball out. You know, they could go out the night before and just show up and ball out. I wasn't one of those players at that level.
Like Rodman goes to Vegas.
Yeah, some people can do that, but some people can't, you know. And I think, you know, a lot of athletes sometimes get into that place where, you know, they compare themselves to other athletes and it's just like, you can't do that. You have to want to be the best that you can be. You know, I think even in other professions, like I think, you know, with social media and, you know, society, you see all these things of like, okay, this person is doing this and this person is doing that. And you start to compare yourself, but it's just like, once you do that, you lose focus on the main goal. And that's to like reach your full potential and do as the best that you can do. Because when you do the best that you can do, more likely than not, you're going to put yourself in better positions to win. And that's getting sleep, and that's eating better, that's doing all these things to like make sure that you are good. Because other people can't, I want you to know, other people can do it the other way. It is not impossible, but you have to do what works for you, though.
So I think self-awareness is key here, right?
Yes, definitely. Definitely. Very, very key. Because I think that we all have strengths. I think everybody has talent. I think if you just hone in on it, and you are self-aware enough to know what your strengths and weaknesses are, and you're honest with yourself and other people, then I think if you focus on things that you're good at, you can propel yourself to heights that you thought you could never imagine, honestly.
Did you reflect on who you were when you were praying and trying to figure out like what to do next? Like, is that part of the meditation that you went through? Like asking yourself, who am I really?
Yeah, because I was just like, you know, for so long, I had played this game aimlessly, and that was all I kind of saw myself as an athlete. Even when I introduced myself, like, boom, it's Philip, boom, I play football. Like, that's who I was. It was such a part of me. I didn't see this side. This side wasn't, this wasn't here. I didn't see it. So it took me praying, and it took me going back and listening to God talk through people and telling me my purpose, because there were things, even getting to this point right now, as far as like doing more speaking and doing creating more of a platform and trying to create more content, I got here because I started listening to people, like listening to them say like, yo, man, your energy, dog, like, every time you're around, like, I really appreciate it. Or like, yo, you said something to me the other day that like really, really stuck with me and it felt good. And like, yo, you should do more of this, or like, you should do more of that. And it's like, maybe I should do more. Like, maybe I should do, like, maybe I'm not doing enough, because everyone keeps telling me, like, yo, P, like, you have something that is special and you need to pursue it. While I was going through the place of like, yo, and like, who am I? Like, what do I do next? It was like, what do you love? And, you know, I started thinking, I was like, oh, I listen to music every single day. Like, that is something that makes me happy. It makes me even happy putting people on music. I'm just like, ah, oh, like, then that's what I want to do.
It's funny how, you know, we live our lives and we think we know what we're into, but when you do become hyper-focused, especially in your situation, you know, when you're an athlete and literally your entire life revolves around it. I mean, it's like, it's what you do when you're just having fun. It's what you do when you're studying. It's what you do when you're hanging out with family, because I'm sure, you know, they were supportive of you, you know, once they figured out they should be, and, mm-hmm. you know, and it can kind of keep you from actually realizing like, oh, all of these things that I'm getting, these small signals that I actually truly enjoy that are completely outside of who I think I am. You know, those things do pop up, but it's like, did you ever experience like a weird feeling when you started to like, it didn't feel like you, and you were kind of like,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. It was just, there were things, you know, and I just started doing this like a year ago. I just started like following my gut, because what I do notice that like, when you do follow your gut and follow your instinct, it never leads you wrong. It's scary though. That's what I will tell you. As I've been doing it, it's so scary, because your gut will tell you to collide way more than you feel comfortable. Like, your gut tells you to speak on, your gut tells you to do things and put things into the universe that you feel more uncomfortable than to do. But I think that if you follow it, even if you do run into some disruption, or even if you do run into something that, you know, isn't pleasant, something beautiful will come out of it. Something beautiful every single time, because it's just like, it's meant to be. But every time I do like hold back, or I don't do something that against my gut, I feel like I am dying inside. So I kind of try to like, I kind of try to trust my impulses and like go. Even when I feel the most uncomfortable, I try to just take the leap, because if I take the leap, I know I'll run into either what's meant for me for sure, but also a lesson.
Yeah. And it almost, it's like, you know, I'm thinking back at times that I've felt those feelings, like, you know, like sometimes you just can't get something out of your head, and you're just like obsessed about it.
Yeah.
And you think you made a decision like not to go with it, but then you're still obsessed with it.
Yeah, you gotta go. That's what I say to people, like, you gotta go, just jump, like, do it, see what happens.
Yeah. And then people will sometimes tell you like, no, like, you probably don't need to do that. And you're like, I know, but I still want
to. I know, that's what I'm saying. But I think people should follow that more often, because the little times that you do follow your gut, I think everybody can say that, like, you go to the right place. But don't you hate when you knew something and then it happens?
Well, and it's that thing. It's like a physical feeling. And, you know, I like, now that we're, you know, we're having this conversation, like, I think about, it's like this pulling at you that, mm-hmm, like, you need to be doing something. And then once you choose to just go with it, it goes away. Like, yeah, it just dissolves.
Yeah, it's very true. It's very, very true. But yeah, I've tried to do more of that, because I do feel like I'm on the earth to do more than just, you know, work in the music industry and work on records. I do feel like my story is something that can help somebody get through that scary part in their life, where they are known for something that they've, you know, that they love, or that everybody knows them for, and now they have to make a switch, a pivot, and that's scary. It's very, very scary to do, but I'm doing it again for the third time, I feel like. You know what I'm saying? So from coming from always being known as a tour manager, road manager, to transitioning to being more of an executive and an entrepreneur and a businessman, to transitioning to being a content creator, and, you know, getting used to hearing how my voice sounds and public speaking, and it's all new to me, and I feel uncomfortable every single time. But I think the more that I do it, the better I'll get. Even in this whole podcast, as I'm talking, I'm like, am I saying this right? Am I doing this right? Oh, I wish I would have said that right, or wish I would have said that better. But I think this is what it's about. It's about feeling uncomfortable. It's about feeling nervous. And in those times, I think you'll eventually push yourself into a place where you're like, oh, wow, I didn't think I could do that. I did it. And that's fun, right?
Yeah. And isn't it funny how it's so easy to like get behind somebody else and be the person working in the background to help them succeed?
So I mean, much more easier. So much more easier.
Yeah. I mean, I remember, so my son expressed, I have a 12-year-old and he expressed some interest in being an actor and he had an opportunity to like audition for All That. They asked him like 3 times. And he didn't want to do it because he had done a little bit, you know, and like, and then he just decided not to. But I put in so much effort into like, I read books. I like was learning the industry. Like I was ready to move to LA. And then all of a sudden he didn't want to do it. And, but at the time, I remember my ex told me, he said this one thing to me that really stuck out. He said, if you put in as much effort into yourself as you do into Aiden, you could be someone.
It's just so much, like, that's crazy, right? Because, like, in all the artists that I work with, like, it's so easy for me to push them and be, you know, there for them and make them and big up them and, you know, make sacrifices and, you know, sometimes unhealthy ones. And it's just like, but for myself, like I am the worst promoter of me. And I get so nervous and like, bro, I've been working on this podcast for like 2 years. I still haven't recorded one episode. I'm just like so nervous about every single step when it comes to me.
You know, and so that speaks to 2 things, right? Yeah. One of them being that there is a need to, you know, to have somebody behind you because, you know, because it's hard to do it all because it's scary. And on the, you know, on the other end, you know, the person who's behind you, they're able to take more risks and truly believe in you because they have less to lose.
That's very true. That is actually so true. I'm so glad we got that on tape. Like, that is amazing. I want to save that. That's a gem right there. For real, for real.
Because it is. Because sometimes, you know, you sit there and you question yourself and you're like, why can't I bet on myself? Like, why can't I bet on myself?
Yeah. But I'm telling other people to bet on themselves. But I bet on myself.
But it's your life. So you know? It's a lot scarier.
Yo, for real. It's because it's my life. That's so, yo. I just had a breakthrough right now.
I think we both did.
Thank you.
Man. Oh, man. No, that's really amazing. So, you know, we're almost out of time. So I want to see, and actually, you know, talking about breakthroughs, is there like a similar sort of breakthrough or something that somebody told you that actually really stuck with you that helps you every day when you really feel like giving up?
One of my coaches told me that, you know, during this time, I know things are tough for everybody. We were having a rough season, but he was like, I want you to always remember, no matter what, you're blessed, one, and there's always somebody going through something worse than you. And there are people who are more successful than you that went through worse than you. So suck it up.
And that's the one, right? Like right at the end. And people are more successful than you and they've gone through more.
I think sometimes we do get into a place where it's like, woe is me. But like, I always try to remind myself that like, yo, there are people, even the people that I aspire to be like, have slept in cars, done things, like just like it's been all over. They've had it and lost it. Like there are people who have been through things that could be catastrophic. And it's just like, this isn't uncharted territory. Like you can do it. Like if they did it, you can, if anybody can do it, you can do it.
Yeah. Yeah, get your head out of your ass and like, you know, have some perspective.
I'm telling you, because and we all know that like I try to look at all things in hindsight, because there's not one mistake that I made that I'm not glad that I made, because I learned from it and it was important for it to happen for me to get me here. And that's the truth. I think for everybody who's made a mistake, they've learned from it and they've grown from it in some type of way.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much, Philip, for joining me today.
Thank you so much. That was like a really, really amazing conversation.
I completely agree. And I'll talk to you soon.
You too.
Here are some key takeaways from my conversation with Philip Payne. 1, natural talent will only get you so far. You have to put in the work to get to where you want to go. Visualize who you are and where you're going. And don't worry whether others see your vision the way you do or not. Because you're the only one who truly knows who you are and what you're capable of. 2, learn to hold yourself accountable and to learn from your failures. It can be incredibly difficult to find that you need to pivot in life and in your career, but don't ever forget this simple truth. If you're not failing, you're not trying. And 3, lean into the feeling of being uncomfortable, because that's where you're going to grow the most. Trust your gut, take a leap of faith, and bet on yourself. Thank you so much for joining us on the Tour Life podcast. Be sure to give Payne a follow on Instagram at Philip A. Payne. And don't forget to like, subscribe, leave a review on iTunes, and to follow the Tour Life on Instagram at the Tour Life podcast.